54. Vale's Lesson. There came also 16 of the Order of Windrunners, and with them a considerable number of squires, and finding in that place the skybreakers dividing the innocent from the guilty, there ensued a great debate. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 28, Page 3. Shallan stepped from the carriage into a light rainfall. She wore the white coat and trousers of the dark-eyed version of herself that she'd named Vale. Rain sprinkled on the brim of her hat. She'd spent too long talking with Adolin after his duel, and had needed to rush to make it to this appointment, which was happening in the unclaimed hills, a good hour's ride out of the war camps. But she was here, in costume, on time. Barely. She strode forward, listening to the rain patter on stone around her. She had always liked rainfalls like these. The younger sisters of high storms, they brought life without the fury. Even the desolate stormlands here west of the war camps bloomed with the advent of water. Rock buds split, and though these didn't have blossoms like the ones back home, they did put out vibrant green vines. Grass rose thirstily from holes and refused to retreat until it was practically stepped on. Some reeds produced flowers to entice cremlings, which would feast upon the petals, and in so doing rub themselves with spores that would give rise to the next generation, once mixed with the spores of other plants. If she'd been at home, there would be far more vines. So many that it would be hard to walk without tripping. Going out into a wooded area would require a machete to move more than a couple of feet. Here the vegetation became colorful, but not an impediment. Shallan smiled at the wonderful surroundings, the light rainfall, the beautiful plant life. A little dampness was a small price to pay for the melodious sound of sprinkling rain, for fresh, clean air, and a beautiful sky full of clouds that varied in every shade of gray. Shallan walked with a waterproof satchel under her arm. The hired carriage driver, she couldn't use Sabariel's coach for today's activity, awaiting her return as she'd instructed. This coach was pulled by parshmen instead of horses, but they were faster than chulls and had worked well enough. She hiked toward a hillside ahead of her, the destination indicated on the map she'd received via Spanreed. She wore a nice pair of sturdy boots. This clothing of Tin's might be unusual, but Shallan was glad for it. The coat and hat kept off the rain, and the boots gave her sure footing on the slick rock. She rounded the hill and found that it was broken on the other side, the rock having cracked and fallen in a small avalanche. The strata of hardened creme were clearly visible on the edges of the chunks of rock, which meant this was a newer fracture. If it had been old, new creme would have obscured that coloring. The crack made a small valley in the hillside, full of clefts and ridges from the crumbled rock. These had caught spores and windborne stems, and that in turn had created an explosion of life. Wherever sheltered from the wind, plants would find purchase and start to grow. The snarl of green grew haphazardly. This was not a true late, where life would be safe over time, but instead a temporary shelter, good for a few years at most. For now, plants grew eagerly, sometimes atop one another, sprouting, blossoming, shaking, twisting, alive. It was an example of raw nature. The pavilion, however, was not. It covered four people who sat in chairs too fine for the surroundings. Snacking, they were warmed by a brazier at the center of the open-sided tent. Shallan approached, taking memories of the people's faces. She'd draw those later, as she had done with the first group of the ghost bloods she'd met. Two of them were the same as last time. Two were not. The discomforting woman with the mask did not seem to be present. Marais, standing tall and proud, inspected his long blowgun. He did not look up as Shallan stepped under the awning. I like to learn to use the local weapons, Moraes said. It is a quirk, though I feel it is justified. If you want to understand a people, learn their weapons. The way men kill one another says far more about a culture than any scholar's ethnography. He raised his weapon toward Shallan and she froze in place. Then he turned toward the crack and puffed, blowing a dart into the foliage. Shallan stepped up beside him. The dart pinned a kremling to one of the plant stems. The small, many-legged creature spasmed and thrashed, trying to get free, though surely having a dart sticking through it would prove lethal. "This is a Parshendi blowgun," Moraes noted. "What does it say about them, do you suppose, little knife?" "It's obviously not for killing big game," Shallan said. "Which makes sense. The only big game I know of in the area are the Chasm Fiends, which the Parshendi are said to have worshipped as gods." She wasn't convinced that they actually did. Early reports, which she'd read in detail at Yasna's insistence, made the assumption that the Parshendi gods were the Chasm Fiends. It wasn't actually clear. "They probably used it for stalking small game," Shallan continued, "which means they hunted for food rather than pleasure."
"Why do you say this?" Moraes asked.
"Men who glory in the hunt seek grand captures," Shallan said. "Trophies. That blowgun is the weapon of a man who simply wants to feed his family."
"And if he used it against other men?"
"It wouldn't be useful in war," Shallan said. "Too short a range, I'd guess. And the Parshendi have bows, anyway. Maybe this could be used in assassination, though I'd be very curious to discover if it was."
"And why is that?" Moraes asked.
"A test of some sort." "Well," Shallan said, "most indigenous populations, the Silnassan natives, the Reshi peoples, the runners of the Erie Plains, have no real concept of assassination. From what I know, they don't seem to have much use for battle at all. Hunters are too valuable, and so a war in these cultures will involve a lot of shouting and posturing, but few deaths. That kind of boastful society doesn't seem the type to have assassins."
And yet the Parshendi had sent one. Against the Alethi.
Moraes was studying her, watching her with unreadable eyes, long blowgun held lightly in his fingertips.
"I see," he finally said. "Tin chose a scholar to be her apprentice this time around. I find that unusual."
Shallan blushed. It occurred to her that this person she became when she put on the hat and dark hair was not an imitation of someone else, not a different person. It was just a version of Shallan herself. That could be dangerous.
"So," Moraes said, fishing another dart from his shirt pocket. "What excuse did Tin give you today?"
"Excuse?" Shallan asked.
"For failing in her mission."
Moraes loaded the dart. "Failing?" Shallan began to sweat, cold prickles on her forehead. But she'd watched to see if anything out of the ordinary happened at Amaram's camp. This morning she'd gone back, the real reason she'd been late to Adolin's duel, while wearing the face of a worker. She'd listened to see if anyone spoke of a break-in or of Amaram being suspicious. She'd found nothing. Well, obviously Amaram had not made his suspicions public. After all the work she'd done to cover up her incursion, she had failed. She probably shouldn't be surprised, but she was anyway. Shallan began.
"I'm beginning to wonder if Tin really is sick," Moraes said, raising the blowgun and shooting another dart into the foliage. "To not even try to carry out the assigned task."
"Not even try?" Shallan asked, baffled.
"Oh, is that the excuse?" Moraes asked. "That she made an attempt and failed? I have people watching that house. If she had..."
He trailed off as Shallan shook the water from her satchel, then carefully undid it and lifted out a sheet of paper.
It was a representation of Amram's locked room with its maps on the walls. She'd had to guess at some of the details. It had been dark, and her single sphere hadn't illuminated much, but she figured it was close enough. Moraes took the picture from her and raised it. He studied it, leaving Shallan to sweat nervously.
"It is rare," Moraes said, "that I am proven a fool. Congratulations."
"Was that a good thing?"
"Tin doesn't have this skill," Moraes continued, still inspecting the sheet. "You saw this room yourself?"
"There is a reason that she chose a scholar as her assistant. My skills are meant to complement her own."
Moraes lowered the sheet. "Surprising. Your mistress might be a brilliant thief, but her choice of associates has always been unenlightened."
He had such a refined way of speaking. It didn't seem to match his scarred face, misaligned lip, and weathered hands. He talked like a man who had spent his days sipping wine and listening to fine music, but he looked like someone who had repeatedly had his bones broken, and likely returned the favor many times over.
"Pity there is not more detail to these maps," Moraes noted, inspecting the picture again.
Shallan obligingly got out the other 5 pictures she'd drawn for him. 4 were the maps on the walls in detail, the other a closer depiction of the wall scrolls with Amaram's script. In each one, the actual writing was indecipherable, just wiggled lines. Shallan had done this on purpose. Nobody would expect an artist to be able to capture such detail from memory, even though she could. She would keep the details of the script from them. She intended to gain their trust, to learn what she could, but she would not help them more than she had to. Moraes passed his blowgun to the side. The short, masked girl was there, holding the Kremling that Moraes had speared, along with a dead mink. A blowgun dart in its neck. No, its leg twitched. It was merely stunned. Some poison on the dart, then? Shallan shivered. Where had this woman been hiding? Those dark eyes stared at Shallan, unblinking, the rest of the face hidden behind the mask of paint and shell. She took the blowgun.
"Amazing," Moraes said of Shallan's pictures. "How did you get in? We watched the windows."
Was that how Tin would have done it? Sneaking in during the dead of night through one of the windows? She hadn't trained Shallan in that sort of thing, only accents and imitation. Perhaps she had spotted that Shallan, who sometimes stumbled over her own feet, would not be best at acrobatic larceny.
"These are masterful," Moraes said, walking to a table and setting out the pictures. "A triumph. Certainly, such artistry."
What had happened to the dangerous, emotionless man who had confronted her at her first meeting with the Ghostbloods? Animated with emotion, he leaned down, studying the pictures one at a time. He even got out a magnifying glass in order to inspect the details. She did not ask what she wondered. "What is Amram doing? Do you know how he got his shard blade? How he killed Helleran Devar?" Her breath caught in her throat even still as she thought about it. But a part of her had admitted years ago that her brother wasn't coming back. That didn't stop her from feeling a distinct and surprising hatred for the man Meridas Amram.
"Well?" Moraes asked, glancing at her. "Come sit down, child. You did this yourself?"
"I did," Shallan said, shoving down her emotions. Had Moraes just called her child? She'd intentionally made this version of her look older with a more angular face. What did she need to do? Start adding gray hairs to her head? She settled into the seat beside the table. The woman with the mask appeared beside her, holding a cup and a kettle of something steaming. Shallan nodded hesitantly, and was rewarded with a cup of mulled orange wine. She sipped it, She probably didn't need to worry about poison, as these people could have killed her at any time. The others under the pavilion spoke with one another in hushed voices, but Shallan couldn't make out any of it. She felt like she was on display before an audience.
"I copied some of the text for you," Shallan said, fishing out one page of script. These were lines she had specifically chosen to show them. They didn't reveal too much, but might act as a primer to get Marais talking about the topic.
"We didn't have much time in the room, so I only got a few lines."
"You spent so long in there drawing the pictures, and so little recording the text?" Marais asked.
"Oh," Shallan said. "No, I did those pictures from memory."
He looked up at her, jaw lowered a fraction, an expression of genuine surprise crossing his face, before he quickly restored his usual confident equanimity.
"That probably wasn't wise to admit," Shallan realized. How many people could draw so well from memory? Had Shallan publicly demonstrated her skill in the war camps? So far as she knew, she hadn't. Now she would have to keep that aspect of her skill secret, lest the ghost bloods make a connection between Shallan, the light-eyed lady, and Vale, the dark-eyed con artist. Storms. Well, she was bound to make some mistakes. At least this one wasn't life-threatening.
Probably.
"Jin," Marais snapped.
A golden-haired man with a bare chest beneath a flowing outer robe stood up from one of the chairs.
"Look at him," Marais said to Shallan.
She took a memory.
"Jin, leave us. You will draw him, Vale."
She had no choice but to oblige. As Jin walked off, grumbling to himself at the rain, Shallan started sketching. She did a full sketch, not just his face and shoulders, but an environment study, including the background of fallen boulders. Nervous, she didn't do as good a job as she could have, but Marais still cooed over her picture like a proud father. She finished and got out her lacquer. This was in charcoal and would want it. But Marais plucked it from her fingers first.
"Incredible," he said, holding the sheet up. "You are wasted with tin. You can't do this with text, however?"
"No," Shallan lied.
"Pity. Still, this is marvelous. Marvelous. There should be ways to use this, yes, indeed."
He looked to her.
"What is your goal, child? I might have a place for you in my organization if you prove reliable."
"Yes."
"I wouldn't have agreed to come in Tin's place if I hadn't wanted that opportunity."
Marais narrowed his eyes at Shallan.
"You killed her, didn't you?"
"Oh, blast."
Shallan blushed immediately, of course.
"Ha!" Marais exclaimed. "She finally picked an assistant who was too capable. Delightful. After all of her arrogant posturing, she was brought down by someone she thought to make into a sycophant."
"Sir," Shallan said, I didn't want to. She turned on me."
"That must be quite the story,"
Marais said, smiling. It was not a pleasant smile.
"Know that what you have done is not forbidden, but it is hardly encouraged. We cannot run an organization properly if subordinates consider hunting their superiors to be a primary method of advancement."
"Yes, sir."
"Your superior, however, was not a member of our organization. Tin thought herself to be the hunter, but she was game all along. If you are to join us, you should understand. We are not like others you may have known. We have a greater purpose, and we are protective of one another."
"Yes, sir."
"So who are you?" he asked,
waving for his servant to bring back the blowgun.
"Who are you really, Vale?"
"Someone who wants to be part of things," Shallan said. "Things more important than stealing from the odd light eyes or scamming for a weekend of luxury."
"So it is a hunt, then,"
Marais said softly, grinning.
He turned away from her, walking back to the edge of the pavilion.
More instructions will follow. Do the task assigned to you. Then we shall see.
It is a hunt, then.
What kind of hunt?
Shallan felt chilled by that statement.
Once again, her dismissal was uncertain, but she did up her satchel and started to leave. As she did so, she glanced at the remaining seated people. Their expressions were cold, frighteningly so.
Shallan left the pavilion and found that the rain had stopped. She walked away, feeling eyes on her back.
They all know that I can identify them with exactness, she realized, and can present accurate pictures of them for any who request.
They would not like that.
Marais had made it clear that ghost bloods didn't often kill one another. But he'd also made it clear that she wasn't one of them. Not yet. He'd said it pointedly, as if granting permission to those listening in.
Talat's hand. What had she gotten herself into?
You're only considering that now? She thought as she rounded the hillside. Her carriage was ahead, the coachman lounging on top, his back to her.
Shallan looked anxiously over her shoulder.
Nobody had followed yet. At least, not that she could see.
Is anyone watching, Pattern? She asked.
Me. No people.
A rock. She'd drawn a boulder in the picture for Marais. Not thinking, working by instinct and no small amount of panic, she breathed out stormlight and shaped an image of that boulder before her. Then she promptly hid inside of it. It was dark in there. She curled up in the boulder, sitting with her legs pulled against her. It felt undignified. The other people Marais worked with probably didn't do silly things like this. They were practiced, smooth, capable.
Storms. She probably didn't need to be hiding in the first place.
She sat there anyway. The looks in the eyes of the others. The way that Marais had spoken. Better to be overly cautious than naive. She was tired of people assuming she couldn't care for herself.
Pattern, she whispered. Go to the carriage driver. Tell him this in my exact voice. I have entered the carriage when you weren't looking. Do not look. My exit must be stealthy. Carry me back to the city. Pull up to the war camps and wait to a count of 10. I will leave. Do not look. You have your payment, and discretion was part of it.
Pattern hummed and moved off. A short time later, the carriage rattled away, pulled by its parchman. It didn't take long for hoofbeats to follow. She hadn't seen horses. Shallan waited, anxious. Would any of the ghost bloods realize this boulder wasn't supposed to be here? Would they come back looking for her once they didn't see her leave the carriage at the war camps? Perhaps they hadn't even gone after her. Perhaps she was being paranoid. She waited, pained. It started raining again. What would that do to her illusion? The stone she'd drawn had already been wet, so dryness wouldn't give it away. But from the way the rain fell on her, it obviously was passing through the image.
I need to find a way to see the outside while I'm hiding like this, she thought.
Eye holes? Could she make those inside her illusion? Perhaps she...
Voices.
We will need to find out how much he knows.
Marais's voice.
You will bring these pages to Master Thydakar. We are close, but so it appears are Astaris' cronies.
The response came in a rasping voice. Shallan couldn't make it out.
No, I'm not worried about that one. The old fool sows chaos, but does not reach for the power offered by opportunity. He hides in his insignificant city, listening to its songs, thinking he plays in world events. He has no idea. His is not the position of the hunter. This creature in Tukar, however, is different. I'm not convinced he is human. If he is, he's certainly not of the local species.
Marais continued speaking, but Shallan heard no more as they moved off.
A short time later, she heard more hoofbeats. She waited, water soaking through her coat and trousers. She shivered, satchel in her lap, and clenched her teeth to keep them from chattering. Weather lately had been warmer, but sitting in the rain belied that. She waited until her spine complained and her muscles screamed at her. She waited until finally the boulder broke into luminescent smoke and faded away. Shallan started. What had happened? Stormlight, she realized, stretching her legs. She checked the pouch in her pocket. She drained every sphere unconsciously while holding up the illusion of the boulder. Hours had passed, the sky darkening as evening approached. Maintaining something simple like the boulder didn't take much light, and she didn't have to consciously think about it to keep it going. That was good to know. She'd also proven herself a fool again for not even worrying about how much light she had been using. Sighing, she climbed to her feet. She wobbled, her legs protesting the sudden motion. She took a deep breath, then walked over and peeked around the corner. The pavilion was gone, and all signs of the ghost bloods with it. I guess this means I'm walking, Shallan said, turning back toward the war camps. Did you expect otherwise? Pattern asked from his place on her coat, sounding genuinely curious. No, Shallan said. I'm just talking to myself. No, you talk to me. She walked on into the evening, cold. However, it wasn't the deadly coldness she'd suffered in the south. This was uncomfortable, but nothing more. If she hadn't been wet, the air probably would have been pleasant, despite the shade. She passed the time practicing her accents with Pattern. She'd speak, then have him repeat back to her exactly what she'd said in her voice and tone. Being able to hear it that way helped a great deal. She had the Alethi accent down, she was certain. That was good, since Vale pretended to be Alethi. That one was easy, however, as Vaden and Alethi were so similar you could almost understand one by knowing the other. Her Horn-Eater accent was quite good, too, in both Alethi and Vaden. She was getting better and not overdoing it, as Tin had suggested. Her Bav accent in both Vaden and Alethi was passable, and through most of the time walking back, she practiced speaking both tongues with a Herdazian accent. Polona gave her a good example of this in Alethi, and Pattern could repeat to her things the woman had said, which was helpful for practice. What I need to do, Shallan said, is train you to speak along with my images.
You should have them speak themselves, Pattern said.
Can I do that?
Why not?
Because, well, I use light for the illusions, and so they create an imitation of light. Makes sense. I don't use sound to make them, though.
This is a surge, Pattern said. Sound is a part of it. Cousins of one another, very similar. It can be done.
How?
Somehow.
You're very helpful.
I am glad... He trailed off. Lie?
Yep.
Shallan stuffed her safe hand into her pocket, which was also wet, and continued walking through patches of grass that pulled away in front of her. Distant hills showed lavish grain growing in orderly fields of polyps, though she didn't see any farmers at this hour. At least it had stopped raining. She did still like rain, though she hadn't considered how unpleasant it might be to have to walk a long distance in it. And what was that? She pulled up short. A clump of something dark shadowed the ground ahead of her. She approached hesitantly and found that she could smell smoke. The sodden, wet kind of smoke you smelled after a campfire was doused. Her carriage. She could make it out now, partially burned in the night. The rains had put out the fire. It hadn't burned long. They'd probably started the blaze on the inside where it would have been dry. It was certainly the one she'd hired. She recognized the trim on the wheels. She approached, hesitantly. Well, she'd been right in her worry.
It was a good thing she'd stayed behind. Something nagged at her. The coachman! She ran ahead, fearing the worst. His corpse was there, lying beside the broken carriage, staring up at the sky. His throat had been slit. Beside him, his parchman porters lay dead in a pile. Shallan sat back on the wet stones, feeling sick, hand to her mouth.
Oh, almighty above!
Pattern hummed, somehow conveying a morose tone.
They're dead because of me, Shallan whispered.
You did not kill them.
I did, Shallan said, as sure as if I'd held the knife. I knew the danger I was going into. The coachman didn't.
And the parchman. How did she feel about that?
Voidbringers? Yes.
But it was difficult not to feel sick at what had been done.
You'll cause something far worse than this if you prove what Jasnah claims, part of her said.
Briefly, while watching Moraes's excitement over her art, she'd wanted to like the man. Well, she'd best remember this moment. He'd allowed these murders. He might not have been the one to slit the coachman's throat, but he'd all but assured the others it was all right to remove her if they could. They'd burned the carriage to make it look like bandits had been behind this, but no bandits would come this close to the shattered plains.
You poor man, she thought toward the coachman.
But if she hadn't arranged a ride, she wouldn't have been able to hide as she did while the coach laid a false trail.
Storms!
How could she have handled this so nobody died? Would it have been possible? She eventually forced herself to her feet, and with slumped shoulders, continued to walk back toward the war camps.